Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about the lore and the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I'm Ann Stickney, one of two lore-focused writers from Blizzard Watch, and I've got both of my wonderful co-hosts with me today. First up, let's go ahead and introduce the other lore-focused writer on Blizzard Watch. That would be Matt Rossi. Hey, Rossi.
Hello, everybody.
How you doing?
It's kind of hot.
I'm sorry. We're supposed to hit like 100-degree weather for a couple of days here. It's not looking very pleasant at all. Deserts. Yay. Anyway, our other co-host, he's not a lore columnist on Blizzard Watch, but he is a shaman columnist, and he just happens to know a heck of a lot about lore. That would be Joe Perez. Hey, Joe.
Well, hello, everybody.
Hi, how's it going?
I am currently engaged in a battle with a groundhog that is slowly destroying the latticework around my porch. So that's been my current status for the last like day and a half.
You have groundhogs where you're at?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, and he's upstate New York.
Oh, okay.
This thing is about as big. Like, remember the Caddyshack movie with the puppet?
Yeah.
This thing's about that big.
Wow. Do they get that big usually?
Up here, yeah. And it's bigger than my dog.
What kind of dog do you have?
My Beagle Rat Terrier mix. Like, my little one named Tristana. She's very tiny, like, relatively speaking. But this thing is bigger than her. To the point where if it's outside, she won't go outside because she is literally afraid of it.
I think the largest groundhog I've ever heard of is about 20 pounds.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So, yeah, they can get pretty big.
See,
I remember I had a dog growing up, and he was actually a Rottweiler Dane cross, and he was big. He was very big. And one day he stuck his head in a hole, and then I heard this sound, and he came popping up with a groundhog attached to his face.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it apparently had bit him.
Yeah, I like out here we have to contend with like ground squirrels, chipmunks, rabbits, and that's about it. You know,
you want a prairie dogs?
Prairie dogs not up where I'm at.
Or you're in the mountains, right?
I'm up on a mountain, but like down low in town and around the edges and outskirts of town and out towards like the farming areas. Yes, prairie dogs are really prevalent, but not particularly where I'm at. Not that I've seen anyway, and usually they're pretty visible. Anyway. This is all besides the point. Obviously, we're here today to talk about lore, but we're actually going to be doing what we said we'd do on the last special edition episode, and that would be answering you guys' movie questions. And boy, did we get a lot of them. So much so that I'm not sure we can get through them all in one episode, but by golly, we're going to try.
So when I say thank you for sending all these in, thank you guys. I'm really happy with all these questions.
Yeah, we got so many. So let's just go ahead and jump right in, okay? First one up is from Zell from the venture company, who says, "Hello, watchers, longtime listener and patron. My question is short and sweet. At the beginning of the movie's novelization, we see a grizzled and gray Khadgar speaking with a still young Varian, which implies that this conversation occurs shortly after the events of the movie. So it seems that Khadgar does get magically aged somehow. How do you think they'll set that up for future movies? Do you think they'll go the route that Joe suggested, Khadgar noticing a wisp of gray in his hair after the Karazhan showdown, or something else entirely? Thank you for all you do. It's always been a pleasure to tune in and nerd out for an hour with y'all." Did you guys read the novelization?
No, not yet.
No.
Okay. I read the novelization, and they definitely, he was not described as grizzled, I would not say. Did they say there was gray in his hair? Yes, absolutely. And there was the implication that he was older. And yeah, that kind of struck me as odd too, because when I saw the film, it was pretty clear he hadn't really aged much of at all, really.
So, I mean, to me, there's a couple different ways they can go with it. Yeah, they can go with the slow, like, transformation, like I, like, mentioned. But there's also the other possibility of, right now, because we have a different universe and there's a different representation of everything that's happening, he could be going into a whole different direction with what he's studying as far as his arcane lore is concerned. And depending on what he's spending his energy on, it could be a result of that, too. I think there will be a touch of that if in the coming movies. I believe they said they wanted it ideally to be a trilogy. So I think we're going to see a little bit more of that from there. And I think that's the angle that they're probably going to spin, is because now he doesn't want Azeroth to come under that much attack again. And, you know, these things are horrible. The Fel is here. I know about this, but I don't know nearly enough. And everything I had was burned by Medivh when he was, you know, being his weird, crazy, mean self. And I think that I personally think that that's the way they'll go for it.
What do you think, Rossi?
I think he's suffering from the after effects of channeling all that Fel. He did it, and it looked like it didn't hurt him, but we don't know the long-term effects of it. So I think that when he channeled all that Fel energy and blew up Deadwind Pass. By the way, nice way to make Deadwind Pass. Kudos.
Yeah,
yep, that was really like
pretty
that.
Clever.
But I think that, you know, down the road, we don't know what the after effects are. Obviously, that stuff was so toxic to Medivh that it was, like, killing him, and he had to keep getting in the magic pool. So, yeah, I think we'll see what happened to Khadgar down the road. I think it's going to have lasting effects.
Khadgar doesn't have a magic pool because that thing was kind of destroyed when he did the explosion thing, too.
I just had a weird thought about that, too.
What?
Well, in regular lore, wasn't it Medivh? Karazhan was built on, like, the crux of all the ley lines, wasn't it? Like, at that point?
Right.
Like, they had all been pulled through there. And technically, if we want to get into it, that's kind of what the font would have been. Or at least into it. So that could not have been necessarily from channeling the Fel, but at that point, Khadgar tapped into essentially pure ley line energy at that point. That could be a whole other kettle of fish to
dive
into.
Little boy wizard suddenly became a man. No, I think that as far as the novelization is concerned, now you have to understand that these novelizations and things like that are also written well before the film is released. I don't know when Golden finished this particular novelization, but usually when you run into a book that's written on, like, an upcoming video game release or something like that, it goes to the publisher well before the game is even a final product. So it could be a discrepancy just because of that. I highly doubt it, though, because the impression that I got from that whole situation was that it was some time after the events of the end of the movie, like maybe a couple of months, maybe a year, not sure. And we'll probably figure that out once the second movie comes out, presuming that there is a second movie. Gosh, I hope there's a second movie.
Apparently China agrees with you.
Right. Yep. And I'm kind of leaning towards what Joe said in terms of what is he studying? What is he doing? The thing is like, he figured out how to get rid of the Fel. He figured out how to expel it. He figured out how to absorb it and then just, like, spend that energy. So if he is, in fact, still fighting these orcs that are still on this, on the Azeroth side of the portal, maybe that's taking its toll on him at that point. Don't know. But we'll find out more about that in the future, I hope. So I hope that answers your question, Zell. Next question is from Asheen, who says, "Hi, Watchers. I enjoyed your discussion last week and about..." Ooh, okay. Wait. This is a confusing sentence. I enjoyed your discussion last week. I'd like to know what you think about the fact that Stormwind wasn't destroyed, what that means for the Warcraft cinematic universe. Do you think they're going to tell a similar story to the established lore, minus the destruction of Stormwind? What about the destruction of Draenor in the Warcraft 2 time period? Do you think that they'll have to compromise on some of these big events? Because, like World of Warcraft, they have to avoid an ending, even for a single movie, where one side has clearly, quote-unquote, won. Keep up the good work, Oshin. What do you guys think?
So there's a couple different ways they can go about that, right? So we have a ton of possibility right now because the story of the first movie was very narrow in scope as far as like where it was going to.
Yeah, I feel like to make it clear, we should point out that at the end of Warcraft 1, Orcs and Humans, the orcs won. They destroyed Stormwind. They killed everything. It was not a happy ending for humankind, for humanity in general. And it ended with Lothar going up north to Lordaeron. Like, that was the end of the first war. This is obviously not what occurs in the movie, because while the movie has, like, a fairly dramatic death in it, there's no... They don't run over Stormwind. And in fact, they don't even get everybody, like the entire horde, through the portal. They still have that original war band plus some added people, but then the portal shut down. So that's what's being discussed here. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead, Joe.
No, that's perfectly fine, and that's a perfectly good framework to work with. But we don't know where in the timeline the current movie sort of ended as far as what they want it to be.
It's kind of its own thing, isn't it?
It's its own thing, right. So this totally could be a thing where Gul'dan now has spent his time figuring out how to open the portal again. Because at this point, the portal's not destroyed. It's still kind of there. It's just dormant, right?
Also, we should point out that in this setting, Gul'dan isn't the one who opened the portal for the Horde to come through.
It was Medivh in his
corrupted
form.
/ Sargeras. And as a result, Gul'dan can't open it. He's left in a situation where, he's left in a situation where he has a tenuous grip at best on the Horde. He's been shown to quote unquote cheat. They don't trust him. Nobody likes him. And his greatest pawn, Doomhammer, is dead. The Horde currently doesn't really have a war chief.
Not Doomhammer, Blackhand.
Blackhand, sorry. Doomhammer's still alive.
Doomhammer's still kicking around. With a tusk from Durotan.
That'll be important later.
Blackhand's dead. Durotan's dead. And obviously he died in front of the entire Horde, you know, through treachery. They all saw it as treachery. Even the fell corrupted orcs were like, whoa, what the heck? I don't like this at all. What's wrong with your face?
You kind of stepped over a line here. I mean, that line is pretty blurry, but so you jumped over it.
It's completely different than the end of Warcraft 1, where Gul'dan was in a coma, Doomhammer had killed Blackhand and took over the Horde and raised Stormwind to the ground. Like, it's a different animal entirely. For all we know, like, we don't even know where this is going. Like, we have no idea what's going to happen to Lothar or Garona or any of it. Heck, Varian has a sister in this. He has a sister in the main timeline.
He does. He has a sister. And everybody, there were several people who thought that maybe that was Prester, like Lady Catrona Prester, because she was wearing kind of the same outfit, but it was definitely not the same person. In the novelization, she was even given a name, and I can't remember her name off the top of my head. But she does have a name, and she's very clearly defined as Varian's older sister. Go figure. Yeah.
So this is not the same setting. Like, for all we know, Lothar isn't going to die.
Stormwind may never fall.
Another thing, Lothar's younger here.
Yes, much younger.
Like, Lothar in our timeline was old. Like, he was an old man. In our timeline, Lane ruled for years. Years. Not like, you know, this Lane's reign seems to have been significantly shorter. Like, our Lane took over, and the first war lasted years.
Lane is also significantly younger, really. Yeah.
So it's the more you try and make it fit exactly with the timeline of the games, the less it's going to make sense to you. It jumps off from the games, but it's very much a case of them going, okay, we're doing a movie. We need this to fit into the movie instead of, okay, let's recreate the three games as a movie.
And I imagine there's also a matter of just simple time constraints. There's only so much you can show in one film. And if they end it here and then do a sequel, they could start that sequel with a montage that talks about, for the past 10 years, we've been fighting, blah, 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 and suddenly everybody's older. I mean, they could go that route with it.
They could also do something completely different, too. Like, nothing says Stormwind has to fall, right?
Well, and here's Stormwind... my thought, though, right? What you do is, if you're doing the second film, you start that second film at the end of the first war. Like, you skip that whole 10 years or however long the first war stretch was, and just jump in with them fleeing Stormwind. You know, like, jump in at that moment of desperation and then kick things off in Lordaeron and go from there.
The other side of the coin, too, is they could decide to flip it on its head and Lordaeron could be the one that got sacked, not Stormwind. It would be a little different, but at the end of the, and I'm just thinking about this, at the end of the movie when the Alliance was forming, I didn't see a whole lot of human royalty everywhere. Like, I saw a little bit, but, like, nothing super iconic. Like, it was a couple guys in crowns. There was more than just that at the time in the human kingdoms. So, well, it's entirely possible.
That big circle of people at the table when they were all talking things over, it looked like there were representatives from several different kingdoms there.
So, I mean, I'm just saying, like, they could do it that way, too. And that could also be what gives Gul'dan his power to reopen the portal from that destruction or whatever the case is. There's a ton of different ways they can go with it that don't necessarily have to fit the established game lore, because like Rossi said, like Anna said, and like I've said, it is a completely different universe.
Yeah, you don't really have to bounce off of the game lore here. You just have to bounce off of the first movie and what makes sense in context of that first movie for a second one. So
I looked it up. Her name is Adarial.
Thank you. I was trying to remember, and I'm like, Adderall? No, that's not it. I couldn't remember what the heck her name is. But hopefully that kind of clears it up a little bit, because it's a different universe, so they have to do kind of different things with it. Asheen. Your name is spelled Oisin, and it's pronounced Asheen, and it's very disconcerting. I'm sorry for murdering it.
It's a little weird for me. I actually had a guild member by that name years ago.
So really?
I keep wanting to pronounce it like he used to.
Oh, and that was completely different?
Completely different.
Okay. Well, our next email comes from Germ, who says, hello, Watchers. Germ here. First time question. Well, statement question. Questment. That's good. I like that term. He says, I like the film a lot, but I found it odd when Garona told Gul'dan at the end, if you do this, you'll lose the Horde. Sure, she might not be in a position to lead the Horde herself, but killing Lane and Blackhand, being the deads, must put her near the top. I just can't see what motivation she has for providing Gul'dan with that counsel. Maybe it's just because she has the feels for Lothar, but it represents a singular best chance to honor Lane's final request to help bring peace, and Lane did so much more for her at that point than Lothar. Also, Medivh seems pretty okay with his baby girl having feels for one of his best friends. I think that'd be creepy. Thanks for all you do, Germ.
I'm not quite sure what you think would happen if at this point Gul'dan did the thing that she told him not to do. I don't know. We can just spoil it. If she'd basically just gone over and dishonored the Mokgora and killed Lothar, yes, it probably would have started a fight, but that doesn't necessarily mean Gul'dan would lose it. It just means that whatever comes out of it, the people that are most likely to oppose him might end up dead. I mean, they just watched him kill Durotan. There's a reason that they didn't jump him after that. They were disgusted, but they were also scared.
They were kind of horrified. And then right after that, when a bunch of people were like, yeah, we're out of here, and they start walking away, and he just kind of like casually hoovers the life out of them. That's when everybody went, okay, we don't like you, but we're going to do what you say because we'd rather not have that treatment done to us. Thanks.
Now, it's true that they might have gone into open revolt at that point and maybe he'd lose, but that's a big maybe. You're basically saying, why didn't Garona gamble? And I think the answer is she felt like she'd gambled enough. Like, this is a case where if you take that chance and you lose, Lothar dies, Lane's body doesn't get back to his people. His people don't rally and unify. And meanwhile, Gul'dan purges the Horde of everybody who's kind of iffy on him at this point. Well, it might work. He might get his head crushed. I mean, there's a lot of Horde. Maybe they rush him and he can't kill all of them. Or maybe he does kill all of them and then he has enough power to rip the portal open. And then they're like, the other Horde are like, what happened? And be like, the humans, let's go. You're putting a lot on the possibility that she was wrong. You know what I'm saying?
I'm going to put a lot on the possibility that she tactically was weighing the choices. And here's the thing. You're in that fight. You look over and you see this portal opening up, and it's not Gul'dan that did it. It's not him chanting. It's not his magic that did this thing. And you see it then disappear, and then you see him freak out, because at one point, like, they zoom in on him and he is, you know, visibly like, okay, what just happened here? This is not good. This is not what I planned. So obviously there is something more powerful than whatever Gul'dan had pledged allegiance to out there. And I think she's more gambling on the fact of keeping as many things alive as she can, her own people included, because at this point she can't go with the humans. They don't trust her. And the Horde is the only thing that she has that would safely resemble, quote unquote, a family or whatever the case is. They're the only ones that are going to take her in at this point because she's already a hero. And she understands that if he dies now, this is going to fracture. This is going to be horrible. And everybody's going to kill each other. And then I'm going to have nothing. Whereas whatever just shut that portal down, I'm wondering if I can buy enough time that we can get that on our side and have that remove him. And hopefully it's somebody on the Alliance and we can bridge this gap. I think it was more of a tactical decision than the, oh God, I have the feels.
The other thing that is made clear in the novelization is that part of it is that she does have the feels. She wants Lothar to get out of there alive. She doesn't want Lothar killed. And this was like her last favor to Lothar. She couldn't tell him that she was doing it. She couldn't tell Gul'dan, no, don't kill him. I love him, because that would be disastrous all over the place. So all she could do is point out logically, point out something to Gul'dan
that he's
point out
of.
The thing that matters the most to him. Point out that if you do this, you're going to lose control over them entirely, because that's the one point he can't argue. And he can't argue that point at that moment, because everybody's still kind of like, we don't know if we trust you or not anymore. He needs to regain that trust. So in order to do that, he needs to honor his people's customs. He needs to let them let Lothar go, you know, and in that moment, Garona has saved Lothar, although it doesn't really matter at that point, because as far as he's concerned, she killed Lane. She's enemy number one, and he's not happy with her at all.
Plus, I mean, there is also a fact that Gul'dan is a lot of things, but he's not stupid.
No, he's definitely not stupid. I mean, he's not stupid in the game universe. He's not stupid here either.
And he not only does he know, yes, I'm risking my people's belief if I attack this guy. He's also aware I might not be able to kill him. He just took down Blackhand in a couple of seconds.
He just ripped through Blackhand like he was
literally ripped through
butter.
Yeah, Blackhand who was fell augmented at that point. Blackhand was the most powerful fell orc there.
And he was already arguably the most powerful orc before he got fell infused to begin with. Yeah.
He was already like the biggest, strongest orc anyone had seen. Now he was the fell augmented monster orc, and he died in seconds. Now, Gul'dan's pretty confident in his strength and power. He's confident in his magic, but he doesn't really know what this guy can do. And he just saw him take Blackhand out in nothing. It took him nothing to do it.
Do you think he set up that duel with Blackhand because on the one hand he figured, okay, I've augmented this dude with enough fell energy that he could probably, you know, squeeze juice from a horse. So maybe it'll take him down. Or do you think he also, maybe there was something in there where he said, well, Blackhand hasn't exactly been the most trustworthy. So if he dies in this scenario, it's not really that bad.
I wouldn't put it past Gul'dan, but I don't think he would have wanted the Mok'gora if it was up to him.
Yeah, I would agree
with
that.
He would have just had Lothar killed while he was out and be done with it. But he was not in a position to insist on that after he'd played around with the other Mok'gora and not completed it successfully. By his people standards, he lost. And that bothered him because he knew it was a wedge. Up to that point, he'd played them perfectly. The whole bit where he, for instance, when he saves Draka's kid and says a new warrior for the Horde, he did that to be a show.
Which, that ties in later with another question we'll get to.
So, I think to a certain degree, Gul'dan is not the kind of orc. When he's angry enough, if you push him enough, he'll do it. He'll unleash his power. He'll show off. But if he's currently contemplative, if he has a moment to think, he is not going to take an action that might risk him.
Well,
in any universe, Gul'dan's first and only love is Gul'dan.
Yep. Plus, so, I mean, his creation, I'm pretty sure he had enough hubris. And I'll say it just like that. He had enough hubris to believe that this ultimate warrior that he has created will be able to take some one single puny human down. So there was no reason for him to really argue against it on top of that, because this is the most powerful thing I've created, and this is the symbol of my authority over the Horde, and he's going to go crush one pathetic human. Sweet. I can sit back and wait.
And in seconds, his guy's dead. Like, Lothar killed him so fast that it was like, what? All the orcs were like,
Now, I argue, had that fight had gone on for longer, you may have seen Gul'dan start to, like, try to cheat again.
Oh, yeah.
But the fact that it was over so quickly is what made that whole thing happen.
He didn't even have a chance to try and cheat. Yeah. And Gul'dan's not stupid. So I think, part of it was Garona reasoning with Gul'dan in the only way that she knew how, the only way that would affect him. And part of it was...
if you do that, too.
Yeah, and part of it was Gul'dan, having the intelligence to go, okay, I'm going to step back. I'm not going to like it, but I'm going to step back.
I need a plan B.
I need to think of a plan B here.
Actually, I think at this point he's probably on plan C. Yeah. Plan A was just open the portal and yay, win. Plan B was, okay, well, we didn't get that done, but, we'll just regroup and do it. Oh, wait, now we just lost the war chief. What the hell is going on?
Okay, so moving on to the next question. It says, there's no name on this one, but it says, hello, uncanny, astonishing, extraordinary, amazing, spectacular, superior, lore watch force.
And Spider-Man.
I love that.
That was a long one. They say, I really enjoyed the Warcraft the movie, but one thing that really stuck with me after the movie was the connection that Gul'dan now has with Thrall. Not only did he kill Durotan, but he was there at Thrall's birth. The self-proclaimed darkness incarnate not only delivered Thrall into the world, but he gave the stillborn baby Thrall warlock CPR by sucking out the soul of a deer and using it to heal baby Thrall. I don't think they'll end up giving Thrall the Inigo Montoya, you killed my father, prepare to die story, but I wouldn't mind seeing a Thrall versus Gul'dan elements versus fell magic battle down the line. Ramifications of Gul'dan's impact on his life aside, I'm curious to see what you guys think they should do with Thrall in the Warcraft universe going forward. Durotan's Jor-El-esque ending narration aside was a little hammy but good nonetheless. Would you like to see Orgrim find a young Thrall, or do you think they go the more traditional Lord of the Clans route with him? Also, the orc that was going to kill Kaelin before Blackhand stepped up, that was Grom. He had Gore Howl at the ready. Also, on a completely random note, if Duncan gets to do a sequel, I'd love to see Deathwing and Alexstrasza show up. I just have this sublime vision in my head of the Horde enslaving the Red Dragons and using them to burn Stormwind to the ground while Lothar rushes to get everyone to safety. Keep up the excellent work. I should point out here, there's a little bit of a discrepancy between the novelization and the movie itself. In the novelization, Gul'dan still, he takes the fell magic and gives it to Thrall to make the baby come alive, but nobody actually sees him doing it. Like, it's something that he does and it's very obscured. So, one second there's dead baby and the next second baby is alive and it's bright green, but nobody kind of figured out what exactly happened there. Whereas in the movie, it was really, really obvious. So I'm not sure if they made it obvious in the movie for the sake of the audience or if everybody else also saw exactly what Gul'dan did to this kid. I'm thinking that they didn't, though, because nobody was particularly horrified by that. Durotan included.
Yeah, because, you got to understand, they were just coming through that initial portal gap where they're coming out of the water at this point, and the deer was at the edge of the forest. Who the heck was paying attention to that as opposed to the now pregnant orc giving birth in front of them?
To be fair, it's not entirely possible. It's entirely possible they didn't see the deer die or even see that it was there. It may have only been Gul'dan even noticed it.
It was just audience perspective. They wanted to show
Right, because they zoomed in on it. Right. That's kind of what I was getting
at. They may have just seen, Gul'dan hold his hand out and then suddenly do magic stuff.
Because, nobody commented on, whoa, you just hoovered a deer and made a kid come to life. Like, that wasn't even a thing. So I'm thinking that nobody really noticed it.
It's possible no one noticed it or no one, no one really thought of what it meant.
So going back to the commentary at hand here, obviously Gul'dan now has this really deep connection to Thrall that didn't exist before. So how do you guys think something like that's going to play out?
maybe I hope to God it isn't Darth. It doesn't go Darth Vader-y on us. I am your true father. I gave you life. Shut up, Tulsa Doom. Like, you know, who made? Yes, my son. For who made you? If not I.
Hi. My old self really loves that, by the way.
I hope they don't go that way. But it would be kind of interesting if he manages to, like, I can actually see Goldon playing on it to a degree, going like, you know, yes, I did kill your father, but it was a Mokgora. It's the way of things. It's our way. And, you know, in a way, I'm responsible for you now. So come to the Horde and I'll take care of you and teach you how to be a leader.
Thrall, I'll be your father.
They could do lots of stuff like that. They could go with the Inigo Montoya-esque revenge route. They could, you know, there's a lot of different ways it could go. I think, obviously, Doomhammer has that tooth. He pulled the tusk out of Durotan's tooth, out of jaw, so he's going to probably try and give it to him.
Doesn't he also say, like, when he's doing that, like, a token for your son? Yeah.
So he's going to be looking for the kid. But he might not know the kid survived. I mean, right now, he doesn't even know Draka's dead.
That closing credit scene with the baby implied that the baby was picked up by humans. So I think they are probably going to go that more traditional Lord of the Clans route, though how much they actually cleave to that, don't know yet. A sequel will probably shed some light on that. I'm just saying, we need a sequel.
It doesn't feel to me like they're changing things just to change them. It feels like they change things when it makes the story quicker,
stronger, too.
More streamlined.
Yeah.
So it's likely it won't be that different. It just, there's more element, like, it, since Gul'dan in the games, Gul'dan is a villain, but he is not the only one. And like, there's Ner'zhul doesn't even appear in these movies. Like, there is no Ner'zhul yet. We haven't even seen him. So by making Gul'dan a much more overarching figure, by making him much more of the open, overt leader of the Horde and a bad guy like that you see and interact with.
Yeah, because there's no mention of the Shadow Council.
Yeah.
There's no mention of, it's just Gul'dan. It's, Gul'dan is that guy that you can point your finger to and go, okay, that's the bad guy.
Yeah. So by making this a more direct connection between him and Thrall, there's more depth. And also Thrall might hesitate. Like, it's one thing to kill the dude that killed your dad, but what if you owe him your life too? Do you know what I mean? There's more tension there.
Well, so, I think it's also going to depend a lot on who finds him first. Like, if it is Aughrim that finds him first and tells him everything that happened, which will be interesting if he understands Orcish or whatever by that point, it'll be very interesting to see how that plays on it as well, because they could totally go like they could go revenge plot. It may not be full Inigo Montoya, but they could go revenge plot where, you know, Aughrim's like, you're the one true leader of the Horde. This is your father's right. It's been passed down to you. We need to go kill, you know, Hunchy McSpike back over there. So they could totally do that. And I could totally see that happening. And
I mean, for that matter, I'm totally agreeing with you. One of the things that is, we don't even know if we're going to have the internment camps.
True. I was thinking that too. Yeah.
We don't know if we're going to have a bunch of broken orcs who need to be rescued.
Because they're not shattered at this point, right? They're not broken like in the original games. Yeah. They're not.
We don't know.
They're not listless.
They're going to be we don't know how this is going to like develop. So it might develop that 20 years down the road, or 15, or however long it takes for Thrall to reach the point where he can pick up a really big axe. He might have spent that time amongst a human family that isn't, you know, treating him like a gladiator slave. You know, he might not be Thrall. We don't know.
If they're going to go clear trilogy with this, logically speaking, the route I see them taking is with that second film. Like I said, you open up with the destruction of Stormwind and kind of do a quick montage of everything that's happened in the past however many years, and then shuffle into the events of the Second War and end the film with the Horde being captured or whatever. Don't even bring Thrall into it, because Thrall's story is that third film.
Maybe. I don't know. I'll be honest.
If you bring him in as like an end credits bonus thing where it's like, oh, look, it's the kid. That's where he's been all this time, you know.
Also true. And it's also entirely possible that, like you were saying, that we don't know which family picked him up and they could not do any of the Blackmoor stuff. This could totally be, it could have been like, it could be the Foxtons that found him, and the Foxtons are a happy family that are living on the outskirts of, you know,
the human lands. And maybe like at the end of the second movie, like he gets picked, you know, he gets swept up in some big orc capture.
Sure.
And ripped away from them, and then he ends up in Blackmoor's hand. We have no idea.
It's kind of interesting, too, from a geography standpoint, because Blackmoor was obviously, he was up north, like way up north, and Frostwold lands were way up north, like in, and I'm talking about game standpoint.
Because they were exiled from the Horde.
They were exiled from the Horde. They were way up north, and they were killed on their way home.
Yeah, he's probably in Elwynn Forest somewhere.
Yeah, this is like Elwynn Forest somewhere, or somewhere down south closer to where the Dark Portal was at, Blasted Lands. So how far did he get on that river? Where did that river take him? And who picked him up? And this is all stuff that's going to be answered in upcoming films, I'm sure.
I just realized it's the Mismantles.
Oh, it's
gonna be Mantle's brother. No, I'm just kidding.
No, creepy. Okay, so we're gonna move on to the next question here, though. Who said? And this is from Braylon, who says, "Hi, Lore Watchers. Braylon here, longtime internet listener and proud Patreon supporter. My question has to do with the Fel and quote unquote demons. Since the first movie, at least, was silent on the Burning Legion, the whole Gul'dan, Medivh, the Fel thing either didn't work for me or was too muddled for me to follow clearly. The movie didn't make it clear where the Fel came from, just that it was quote-unquote evil magic not native to Azeroth, but clearly because of Medivh becoming a demon at the end, it has demony connections. What are those? What purpose, without Sargeras's possession, did Medivh have for tapping it? Why and how did Gul'dan come across it and decide it was a good thing to tap? I just felt that the game canon's motivations for demonic magic, i.e. the Legion, was very clear, while in the movie the Fel felt more like the evil MacGuffin-y thing that made the movie go. Was there some sort of connection motivation that I just missed after two viewings, or were the motivations simply not there, not clear? And if so, why not? Do you think it's intended as a mystery to be explained in the sequels, or was it just an oversight or simply unsatisfying bad magic is bad?"
To be fair, in the original like Warcraft RTS games, the Orcs versus Humans, it was a very mysterious thing. Like it was,
yeah.
We're talking about like Shadow Council stuff where like Gul'dan wasn't at the forefront of it. Fel magic and demons weren't really a thing. It was literally just an invading force of orcs coming to kill a bunch of humans and take over their planet. And that's like, what we got in the movie here.
They were just, yeah. I mean, there was actually a few demons mentioned. Like Sargeras is mentioned all the way back.
Sure, yes.
But it was never made particularly explicit.
But that's the other thing
here,
too.
We know all of this in hindsight, and we know all this, like, retrospectively, we know all of this stuff that's gone on. But somebody just walking into the movie theater, sitting down to watch a movie, does not have that knowledge of that 20 years worth of history. All they really need to know is that the green stuff is bad.
Yep, they don't need to know where
it comes
from
yet. It can be clarified
yet.
Later. It doesn't have to be clarified now. Maybe it doesn't even ever have to be clarified. Maybe it's just the thing, and it makes demons pop up, and those demons may or may not be explained, but they're bad, and so is the Fel stuff.
All I know is I think that they still missed an opportunity to make an Inferno out of the Clay Golem, but, you know, whatever.
That would have been pretty cool, actually.
I was totally expecting, it's going to go in Inferno! No!
I felt like that the Golem was kind of a callback to, like, all the Golems in Karazhan.
It was.
But it didn't look enough like any of them, so I was like, eh.
It wasn't like the mechanical constructs that he's got, well, the arcane constructs that he's got walking around in there, the whole, yeah, it wasn't quite the same thing. The menagerie is not open. Anyway, no, it...
I didn't really have a problem with it.
It had gone infernal because it kind of looked like him.
My thing was that since this you know, Braylon here, you seem to actually know the backstory, which I did as well, obviously. Mm-hmm. And us knowing the backstory means we know the backstory. We know that he turns into Sargeras at the end. You can see it. It looks just like Sargeras. It's got the horns and everything. So I think it's pretty clear that the Legion is involved, but that we're not going to see them yet.
It's just not important to the story at hand yet, if at all.
In terms of where Gul'dan found out about it, the implication to me was that Medivh was not entirely in control of himself when he took his jaunt over to Draenor to meet Garona's mom and do the things he was doing. Like, at least some of that was at Sargeras' behest, or whatever you want to call it.
You know,
And Gul'dan is obviously aware of these things, perhaps even tipped off to them. And we even have at one point Garona talking to Medivh when she's in the cage. And Medivh is like, "What? How did he do this? How did he open that portal? How did he know about that portal?" And she's like, "Well, he was in communications with something." And he's like, "You saw this?" She's like, "No, but I heard it. It had a voice like flames." that was clearly him talking to the demon inside Medivh. Because Medivh was like, what? Medivh was beginning to put things together at that point. Yeah, Medivh didn't know until that point. Then he was like, wait a minute.
And when you look at the story that he gave for going to Draenor, and also everything that he kind of referenced at the end there, like his final words where he was like, loneliness is our greatest enemy. It could be that Sargeras, you know, insidiously working inside of him and affecting his mind, said, yeah, you're real lonely, aren't you? You're real sad. This is real super sad. You should find somebody. You should find somebody worthy of being with you. Go to the ends of the earth if you have to. Go beyond the ends of the earth. Hey, look, you know that fell magic that you discovered? Oh, yeah, the other thing, if you want to know about how Medivh tapped into the fell magic for the first time, go read the Bonds of Brotherhood graphic novel, because that explains it. Basically, there was an attack going on Stormwind by trolls, and the trolls were using this fell magic for some reason. So it is on Azeroth. It is native to Azeroth. It's not like it's not native to Azeroth, but it's something very strange that they don't really get.
And because we know the creation myth of the world, we kind of understand where that came from and why, so it makes kind of sense.
What's this exact phrase to it? Something along the lines of, it has no place in this world?
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't saying that it's not here. He was saying it shouldn't be here.
It shouldn't be here.
And to be perfectly honest, it kind of falls into what is a classic movie trope of the fantasy genre whenever it involves magic. Like, you can go back to like Merlin and all those other movies from the late 70s, early 80s. Whenever they dealt with magic, there was always the black magic and white magic. There was always this big distinction between the two.
Here's the good stuff. Here's the bad stuff.
Exactly. And that's what fell was in this story.
It was the classic trope
of the bad stuff. And so it doesn't need a further explanation.
Quicker, easier, more seductive.
Yep, exactly.
And again, if this is something that they want to go into with future films, it's obvious that, you know, the dominoes have been set in place to line that up. But they don't need to be knocked over just yet. They're just there waiting in the wings for, and eventually, if that eventually ever comes. If not, doesn't matter. Green stuff, bad. That's all you need to know.
Ecto Cooler lied to you.
Ecto Cooler lied.
Oh, not Ecto Cooler.
Okay, next question is from Colton, Argent Dawn US, who says, greetings, lore watchers. Recently, I've gotten into some of the books. I've only read War Crimes, Chronicles, and Illidan so far. One of the biggest shockers to me was the use of souls to power Illidan's portals, and then we saw the same thing in the movie, that souls were used to fuel the dark portal to Azeroth. Was there anything previously in the game or books that the dark portal was powered on Draenei souls? Do you think there will be any carryover of the fell from the movie to the game? There's been a lot of speculation about shadow priests using void magic, but I'm wondering if there will be larger ramifications to our warlocks come Legion as well. Thanks for all the wonderful work you do, Colton. Okay, well, Colton, I'm going to say this right off the bat. Nothing from the movie is making it in game. It's two separate things. But okay, Joe, go. Sorry.
I'm going to let Rossi handle this one first.
Okay, Rossi. I was going to say that warlocks have been using souls to power things, including portals, forever. Demonic gateway powered by souls. It's things warlocks do. They pull souls out.
Stones.
Soul shards, soul stones. Yeah. Warlocks mess around with souls. In terms of, we didn't really know what the dark portal was powered by until we kind of see a little bit in Warlords of Draenor, but the dark portal we see there is powered by warlocks. They actually strap warlocks into it and power it with them. But think of it this way. When the first dark portal was made, the road to it is paved with Draenei skulls. They killed a lot of Draenei.
So
to make
many.
That thing hurt. And that was established as far back as like Warcraft 2.
That's a Draenei bone highway right there. Yeah, and it's really disturbing.
And they established that too in Burning Crusade. When you first step through the portal, that path of glory is paved in bones.
Yeah, it is literally a road of the dead. They killed as many Draenei as they could in the construction of the Dark Portal. And while they never specifically said, because we're using their souls to power it, they did, you know, it was pretty established. Warlocks do bad things and everything around them dies.
Since vanilla, warlocks have always had to use soul shards to fuel summoning portals. So it's kind of a thing.
Yeah. In terms of like the game, the game's portrayal of fell magic in warlocks doesn't have to have any ramifications because, if anything, the movie was just stealing that.
Yeah, yep. And changing it a little bit, but only a little.
Yeah, but mostly changing it just by name, really. It isn't really altering it significantly. I mean, the only thing we see in the movie that we don't see Warlocks doing in the game is Medivh's pool of purification, which is more of a plot device than anything else. It explains how Medivh can kept from going crazy as long as he did.
He's got his arcane day spa set up in the tower, so, you know.
Yeah, but in terms of that, there's nothing needs to be added to Warcraft.
No, and I mean, and you hit it on the head too. And if you've ever played a Warlock, even through vanilla, like you go to the little den, like especially Alliance Warlocks, you go into the little den of secrets in the middle of, you know, Stormwind, and it's a bloody cellar. Like, it's not clean, it's not pristine. It's kind of a den of horrors. And anywhere you go that there's Warlocks, it's a den of horrors. So there is very clearly that connection already in the game and has been for a very long time. It's just never outright said. And
Warlocks don't go around telling everybody else, by the way, here's your uncle.
Hey, remember that rabbit infestation you had? Totally took care of it. Don't ask.
Just don't ask. You don't want to know. And you can't get under the slaughtered lamb unless you got the secret password.
This portal is powered by the souls of these bunnies. Oh, the gnome warlocks to creep me the hell out.
Okay, the next email actually has like a series of questions, so we'll kind of rapid fire through these. Okay, guys?
Yep. Go for it.
All right, so first question says, did Khadgar level up Golden Glow after defeating Medivh?
It certainly looked like he did.
Okay, Joe?
I didn't hear a ding, so I'm going to say no.
I think that's when he became man wizard instead of boy wizard. Like, it was that moment. It was like, ding! Level 60. Now he's good.
Hey, and okay. Nobody said Gratz in all chat, so I mean, there's no proof that he leveled up.
Yeah, nobody Lothar, said Gratz. No,
Lothar said Gratz to him.
Look,
Lothar walked up to him and said, you did really good, I'm proud of you.
Yeah, that was the Gratz. And maybe the golem would have said Gratz, except that its, you know, head had been sliced in half. Anyway, okay. Number two, did Medivh die at the end of the movie?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
He was crushinated, but good.
That doesn't mean we won't see him again.
That wasn't, like, mostly dead. That was dead. But that doesn't say that he can't come back. Because the thing is he died in The Last Guardian, too. He was beheaded in The Last Guardian. And yet he came back for Warcraft 3. So dead isn't necessarily dead in the Warcraft universe. And I think that applies to the movie universe as well. Maybe we'll see him again in the future. I hope we do. Because I really liked him a lot. Okay. Number three. If Medivh was only gone 6 years, how did he father Garona, who is in her 20s? Go.
Wibbly wobbly, meiji weiji time stuff.
Orcs don't age at the same speed as humans. Possibly Gul'dan did some magic-y stuff. Who knows?
Maybe Gul'dan life hoovered her into her 20s.
We also don't know how he traveled to there. It could have been through time and space. We already know that Azeroth has a time guardian, and he's this arcane masterpiece that has all this power from all these beings. He totally could have just been like, yeah, I'm going to go to that planet. That's a great idea. Thanks for that big idea voice in my head. How do I get there? Oh, this incantation. Okay, cool. Why? Okay, it's back in time. I don't know the difference. It's a new planet to me. So totally possible.
Draenor's days are very short. Okay. Anyway, next question. Number four. What time frame would Gul'dan, sequel speculation questions. That's what these two are, okay? Number four. What time frame would Gul'dan create the first Death Knights? Could they be in the second movie?
They could be.
They could be, but I think it'd be more like a third movie thing, if anything.
If they started the first or the second film with the destruction of Stormwind, then yes, you could probably see Death Knights in it. If they do not, if they choose to go some other route, which they could, because it's like its own thing, then maybe you won't see them right away. Or maybe you will, because that would be pretty cool.
The thing is that you could see them even if Stormwind doesn't get destroyed till like, maybe even if it doesn't get destroyed
maybe
at all.
Maybe Gul'dan wants to create some really loyal soldiers.
He's got all those dead human soldiers. Keep in mind, he's got a bunch of dead Knights of Stormwind laying around.
What
after
better
that
way
fight
to keep the Horde under his thumb than to create an army of their own dead to keep them in line, which is kind of gross but cool at the same time. Okay, number five. Do you think Gul'dan will have to open the portal again in order to go off raise the Tomb of Sargeras, or will he just take the orcs that came through the first time?
I think the reason opening the portal again is definitely going to be a plan of his.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's been established as an important thing. It's also been established as an I win button for him. He has the numbers. Now, does he have the numbers with everyone allied? I don't know. At the end of this movie, everybody was like, oh yeah, we totally should have allied with you. Yeah, okay, Lothar, you're in charge. You lead us. So maybe it's not an I win button for him this time, and maybe he'll do something else. But I don't think he'd ever shy away from the idea of getting his numbers up. Because right now, they are outnumbered.
Oh, yeah. Well, the other side of the coin, too, is that nothing says the Tomb of Sargeras actually exists in this universe.
That's true.
We don't know yet. So we have no idea if that's even a thing or if that's ever a thing that needs to happen anymore. Because game lore, the Tomb of Sargeras is quite literally a plot device. Let's be honest about it. While it may be cool lore-wise, it is a plot device to move other pieces of the story along, including the upcoming expansion. It is a centerpiece for that.
You kind of have to keep in mind, too, that for World of Warcraft, World of Warcraft has like this cavalcade of villains.
Mm-hmm.
They come, they show up, we destroy them, and then another one pops up to take their place. That doesn't make much sense for film and for cinema. You want an easily identifiable enemy, one that's going to carry over, and not necessarily, oh, here's the bad guy for this film. Look, he's dead. Okay, next film, let's make another bad guy, you know.
Keep in mind, too, that in WoW, we're on our second Gul'dan.
Yeah, we are.
Yes.
We actually killed one Gul'dan, had to go to another universe
to
get
another. We brought back Gul'dan, the sequel.
Yeah. Like, I'm Gul'dan, but I'm even eviler. I mean, seriously, like, the movie isn't going to have Gul'dan 2.
No.
Whereas in WoW, that's a thing that you can do.
Gul'dan 2, Electric Boogaloo.
No, I've got the rich taste of Gul'dan. You can't believe I'm not Gul'dan. Because I am.
Thank you for the question list. Next email is from, ooh, wow, that's a good name, and I can't pronounce Unagadon? Yeah? Unagadon, Alliance player on Arathor, who says...
Inujadon, but yeah.
Inujadon, okay. Anyway, he says, greetings, lore watchers. Is it explained why Medivh spared the quote-unquote plot armor orcs in the initial Elwynn skirmish? My first guess was that Orgrim, Durotan, and Garona hadn't attacked anyone. However, Blackhand and quote-unquote captured orc obviously had been. Even Durotan seemed confused watching the magic spread past him and draining orcs behind him. Was Medivh playing the long game here? Second question, who will be able to tell Goel his true name? As far as I can tell, only Blackhand, Durotan, and Draka knew that information. Thanks for your time, Unagadon.
Actually, it's really simple who he kills. Yep. And who he doesn't kill. If you look closely, the orcs that die are killed because they basically reject the fel inside them. It basically blows up out of them. The ones that don't, they might be green like Arona is, but they've not been actively made fel by Gul'dan. Even at that point, Blackhand hadn't been yet. The only orcs that die from his spell are the ones that have fel in them. Yep. Because he's just literally, whatever he did deliberately hit that. They was targeting the fel. That's why.
And as far as the Goel thing, I think that you have a couple different possible explanations, and one thing that we haven't really talked about in the movie yet, which is shamanism, my specialty, yay. There is a whole thing where you talk to the spirits and you talk to your ancestors. I mean, it's entirely possible that Ogrim Doomhammer gives him the tooth and says, this was your dad's, and next thing you know, he's communing with the spirits of his ancestors, and you have the whole Harry Potter thing with, like, you know, Durotan and Draka with their hands on his shoulders.
Or, you know, the whole Star Wars thing.
You're a shaman, Thrall!
The whole Star Wars thing.
Yeah, old Ogrim Doomhammer is going to be played by...
But they're all blue holograms.
There's so many ways they could go about it, really, ultimately. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I said it's true from a certain point of view, Thrall.
I still like that. You're a shaman, Thrall. Anyway. All right. Next email is from Calidus Hunter. Marshall Calidus Hunter Bontour. Who says, watchers, during the movie discussion, you talked about the Orgrim/Gul'dan meeting when Gul'dan offered The Orgrim-Gul'dan meeting when Gul'dan offered Orgrim the Fel. You said that after he refused Gul'dan, he then sent the orcs to kill the Frostwolf clan. The way I interpreted it was that he had already sent them to kill the Frostwolves, despite what Orgrim did. Would like to hear your thoughts. The novelization makes it clear.
Yeah, right, even in the movie, it felt like it was clear that he did that at that point.
Yeah, the novelization makes it clear. So you might want to pick that up. It's actually, I really liked the novelization. I thought it was really well done, and it cleared up a lot of those moments that I had when I was watching the movie. So if you have some of those, reading Golden's novel probably a good idea. Next email is from Marie, who says, "Hi, Anne, Matt, and Joe. I love Lore Watch, and I listen every week. It's a nice perk for Patreons. My question for you is this. In the fight when Medivh cast the spell that killed only the Fel-touched orcs, why did Garona not die? She's green."
Being green,
it
kind of
ties into
Fel-touched.
The previous one, so.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it ain't easy being green.
She's green, but so is Thrall, and he's not Fel-touched either. The green is one thing. It means you've been exposed, but it's not the same as actually being Fel-juiced. Because if you look, when Doomhammer gets juiced up, he doesn't turn green. He's still a brown orc.
I have a really simple explanation for this.
Go for it.
Garona's his kid. He's not going to blow her up.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's that, too.
That is the most easy explanation. I was going to go with that, too.
I don't know if he knew she was his kid yet at that point. Like, I don't know, because he hadn't even got a chance to, like, really look at
well,
her.
Well, if he's looking at all the internal logistics of these orcs and going, okay, which ones have the fell stuff, you know, while he's sitting there and Khadgar's,
half me.
Khadgar's
tugging
out his
sleeve. He's got
mage
brain. He can see inside of stuff. It's all good.
Khadgar's sitting there in the bubble tugging his sleeve going, Medivh, you should probably do something, Medivh. Oh my god, there's an orc right there, Medivh. And meanwhile, Medivh is just chilling, like, exploring what these orcs are. And decides to, you know, detonate the fell orcs. He might have checked out Garona, gone, whoa, wait, she's half human? That's interesting. And just decided to let her go.
The other thing is it could have been keyed to, like a program, like a virus hunting program, like an antivirus, where it's like, okay, spell, seek out fell, comma, orc, comma, destroy. And she ignore / human.
And the
she's
spell
part
went
human.
Yeah, the spell
what
went,
do I do with this
orc,
one?
Oh, orc.
Yeah, unhandled exception, skipping the next line. And then it just goes and does its thing.
Would
That's
you like to upgrade to Windows 10?
God darn it, Clippy, no!
I wish Clippy was still around. Are you kidding? Windows 10 needs Clippy.
Clippy's the name of the fell works.
All right, the next email. There are three big movie questions here, but I'm just picking one of them because they said, you know, just pick the ones that interest you. And we have a lot of emails to get through. So this one is from Gorquin, who says, "Greetings, Lore Watchers. When Durotan challenges Gul'dan to a Mac'Gora, Gul'dan makes some comment to the effect of him being the chieftain of nothing, what with the Frostwolf Purge. But given the limited amount of orcs allowed in the initial warband, there should still be plenty of Frostwolves on Draenor, right? I find it hard to believe that Drek'thar, for example, would have been killed in the Purge without so much as a mention."
That's kind of handled by the prequel book, actually.
Even if they are still on Draenor? I mean, there are some Frostwolves back there, because I know his mother's back there. But even so, he doesn't have any of them with him.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't even, yeah, even if he'd been like, I still have Frostwolves back, yeah, and how are they going to get here? Through the portal I'm going to open? No.
Maybe they're not. Maybe I'm going to open that portal and order them, dead or dead doornail.
So it doesn't matter. At that point, the Frostwolves were persona non grata to Gul'dan. And thus the Horde, whether or not there are still Frostwolves around.
Yep.
It doesn't matter. I mean, granted, I'm sure Gul'dan would, if Gul'dan hadn't killed them all, I'm certain that that's on his list of things to do. You know, I need to pick up green goo and carry it around in a cup. I need to kill the Frostwolves. Really, remember the cup full of green goo to offer to people and kill Frostwolves. Yeah, that's all I got on my list. Oh, Conquer Azeroth. I almost forgot that one. Man, this cup of green goo is amazing. You guys should drink this. No, you got again with that.
I promise it's only Ecto Cooler. But no, and they handle that a little bit in the prequel book, too, and we talked about that, where, like, a lot of the Frostwolf clan has died off. Like, there is not a whole lot left.
There's not a ton of them left.
And the initial warband that came through the portal to Azeroth was the most able-bodied warriors from each clan. So there's still going to be some left over, but we don't know how many actually made it through onto Azeroth.
Yeah.
There could have been a very small number of them. Drek'thar may not be over through the portal. He may still be back on Draenor.
Wait. I have to interject here, okay? Because the novelization...
Dagnabbit!
Sorry. Okay. In the novelization, Drek'thar initially wasn't going to go through, but he kind of insisted on going through because he's a shaman, and apparently this new world is supposed to have the elements on it, and he wants to see what those elements are. He wants to talk to them. So he goes along with Palkar, his assistant, which, by the way, call back to World of Warcraft lore, and also... Drek'thar's character in the novels and things like that. he does go through the portal. He disguises himself. He goes through the portal. He does survive. I believe Orgrim, after the purge, he, like, there's, you know, he's thinking over who has died, and he makes a mental note that they haven't found Drekthar or Palkar anywhere. Like, they haven't found the bodies. So it's possible that they're still alive. He just doesn't know. He doesn't know if any of the Frostwolves have escaped beyond Draka.
It's also totally possible that Drekthar just at one point, before anything happened else in the movies, before the purge ever happened, is like, hey, yeah, we're going to go over to that mountain over there. That seems like a good idea.
I'm going to nope out and go check that mountain.
Yeah.
Because why not? Or, oh, the elements are talking to me. They say I need to go far, far away. So I'm going to go do that. Well, you guys stay here and do your thing, and I'm just not going to tell you guys about it. I'm going to go off and do shaman things.
Oh, man, this
things.
Planet has talking bears. Awesome. I'm going to follow them.
I'm going to follow those guys. So, yeah, it honestly, I think that when he said that, you know, he's all the chieftain of nothing or whatever, it was Gul'dan trying to squash any of Durotan's confidence. And then, of course, you know, it offered Orgrim that opportunity to step up and go, he's still my chieftain, because he had to. Anyway, I really liked Orgrim in the movie. I thought he was
great. Orgrim always should have had.
He did a good job with making his betrayal something that was personal.
Yeah.
And something that, you know, he obviously regretted. He just...
Deeply regretted, yeah.
He was just, you know, an orc who couldn't quite see beyond his own people. He couldn't see the humans as anything. We're gonna ally with those guys. Those teeth don't even look like they could bite you. Like, seriously, what are they going to do if they drop their swords? How are they going to bite? They can't bite with those teeth. Come on.
They're small teeth.
Look at their hands.
They're so pink and tiny.
Yeah, and their hands are, like, ridiculous. I can't even, like, they couldn't even put their entire head in their hand. Like, you could totally, look, go ahead, cover your hand with your, right there. That's the way it's supposed to work. Your hands are supposed to be at least as big as your head. These guys' hands are, like, half the size of their heads.
I like that scene where Durotan and Garona are talking, and he's got his hand over Khadgar's mouth, only instead of over his mouth, it's just kind of, like, generally over his entire face, because it's just that big.
Yeah, he's completely clamped
down. He's just like, you know, right over his face. And all you could see are Khadgar's terrified eyeballs sort of peeking out. All right. So we are to our last question. Oh, my goodness. We made it through this entire list. What the heck? You guys are great. All right. This one is from Bretak, who's a dwarf paladin. Clearly, by my race/class, I'm biased to seeing Warcraft 2. We understand that entirely, Bretak. Anyway, he says, so, the ending of the Warcraft movie differs from the game canon in that Stormwind still stands, but a more important change is that the Dark Portal got shut down with the Horde divided. If they get a sequel, do they do Warcraft 2? I have an idea of how they could do Gul'dan's Fall and Orgrim's Rise, but based on what they've already given us, it's not interesting and not much of a coup. Or do they skip Warcraft 2 and go straight to Thrall/Arthas, etc.? Bretak, what do you guys think?
I definitely don't think they're going to go straight to Thrall/Arthas. I think you were the one who pointed out that Duncan Jones was like, I'd love to see that movie, but I don't want to make it.
Yeah.
It's like, I want him to make that movie.
Really,
Duncan, what are you doing? I want to see you make that movie, but okay.
Like, you know, I honestly don't. I'm of the opinion that they shouldn't destroy Stormwind.
Mm-hmm.
That the destruction of Stormwind was always a bad idea. It always made things too much. The destruction of Stormwind turns the orcs forever into villains, and you can never escape it. You can never say, you know, anything the orcs ever do to try and make any kind of place for themselves in the world, humans are always be like, oh, the guys that burned our city to the ground.
Okay, what about Gul'dan makes Death Knights? Death Knights destroy Stormwind.
Still the orcs' fault.
Still the orcs' fault, yeah.
Seriously, the problem is Gul'dan himself is the orcs' fault. It's from the perspective of humans on Azeroth, it's not like they're going to go, this is the problem of racism in general. It's like any group will always see a bad member of an outside group as representing the group, but bad members of their own group as, you know, loners and renegades. Gul'dan is obviously not representative of all orcs. I mean, if you look at the way Gul'dan acts, he's his own orc, and the things he does are on him.
But even Lothar, who had that kind of reinforcement that all orcs aren't bad in the film, sort of had that erased at the end when he found Garona's knife embedded in Lane's neck. So
that was the other thing, though. You had Khadgar going, we don't know the whole story. So it's entirely possible that there's redemption waiting to happen, at least in some form, way, shape, or form.
Yeah, but ultimately, the destruction of Stormwind basically puts their relations in a place where nothing can, it can't be equalized. And well, the problem is that it's always been tried to be equalized. If you look at people who actually play World of Warcraft, you always hear like the result, the other side, well, you burned down Stormwind. Oh, you put us in camps. And the response is always, yes, we put you in camps. We didn't kill you. You tried to kill us. You burned down our city and killed everybody who was still in it. And that's, if you go that route, the problem is what you do next. Warcraft 3, it's going to be a long road to hoe. On the other hand, if you do it and you do it right, it can be a good part of Thrall's story, because Thrall obviously is the guy that tries to redeem his people. But there's like a whole back and forth here. Honestly, I think if they're going to destroy Stormwind, it shouldn't be at the beginning of the movie, nor should it be at the end of a movie. It should be right in the middle of the movie. It should be the climactic part of Act 2, because then you set up Act 3 as the what do we do now?
And then you have that big old battle at the end.
Yeah, you basically go with, if you start it with Act 1, Gul'dan builds the Horde, the Alliance tries to build up its forces. Act 2, Gul'dan strikes, he takes out Stormwind, everything's coming up Gul'dan. Act 3, Revenge of the Humans, they get everyone together, they come up with a last-ditch effort, and they take Gul'dan out. That works for a movie's, it's three dramatic peaks. But if you start off with Stormwind destroyed, then you have to make the entire movie about that. And I don't think that that's a good movie.
True.
I'm kind of in the camp, though, firmly in the camp of you don't even need to destroy Stormwind at this point. Like, you've already established a different line of lore. You've already established a different style of storytelling. You can stick to political assassinations and, small murders that spark bigger conflicts. Things like that are fine. But I think that if you sack Stormwind, you're taking too much out of what could potentially be a whole other story, because that greatly skews everything. Now, will it be thrown in? I mean, maybe. We saw a lot of the classic beats in this movie from the original storyline, like these very iconic beats that were put in, the death of Elaine and all those other items that happened. But this is one that I really hope they shy away from, because I think it makes it a more interesting dynamic as far as villains go when it's a little more thoughtful than you destroyed our capital. Oh, Lord, you murdered all of us. It makes it a little more calculating. It makes it a little more less mob mentality.
A little more personal.
And it makes it easier to paint Gul'dan as an even greater evil source, depending on what he does, if he doesn't destroy Stormwind. You could do so much more with him by not doing that.
Plus, I mean, there is the problem of we don't actually have other human cities established very well.
At this point, yet. Not yet.
I think a couple get mentioned. Snooty representatives from other cities, but we don't have those other cities. Dalaran, that's like the only other city we saw. That and Ironforge, but we didn't see the other human nations at all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We didn't see Lordaeron. We didn't see... The thing is that, there is a lot going on here. So who knows? I mean, ultimately, who knows what they're going to do? The entirety of the next movie might be about, girding for war, and we might not get a Warcraft through Warcraft 3 type feeling. We might get something entirely different. So
I think it's in good hands, though. I think it's in good hands. I think that the kind of distillation of that story worked out really well for the movie franchise.
I have a lot of faith in Duncan Jones, not just because of the way he makes movies and that I'm a fan of his previous movies, but I know he's also a fan of the material. And that's very evident if you watch this movie and anything going forward. If he's allowed to put his touch on the things that we already love, it's going to be, in my opinion, it's going to be good. And I think that if we let him tell the story, or maybe have him sit down and everybody collectively says, how could we make this story better than what it was? I think what we're going to get is actually going to wind up being more entertaining than some of the other story beats we've had. And it's going to be a little more impactful. And I'm on board for that.
Yeah, I like his interpretation of the universe. And it's really obvious, when you watch the film, that it was created and crafted by not just Duncan Jones, but like everybody else in the cast who understood what Warcraft was, like at least had some kind of initial understanding of what it was. So you can kind of, it's in good hands. It's in good hands. I don't think that they could have picked a better person than Jones. I don't think I would have wanted to see Sam Raimi's interpretation of World of Warcraft, honestly. I don't think I would have wanted to see it by anybody else. So yeah, that wraps us up for the emails today. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch, and your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your questions answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. And because I've been talking about it like throughout all of these questions, for you guys, listeners of Blizzard Watch, Audible's offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you guys the opportunity to check out their service. They have the Warcraft novelization there. You can get that as your freebie. You could get Durotan as your freebie if you wanted to. Both of these kind of help explain what's going on a little bit more, and they're both by Chrissy Golden, who is so familiar with the Warcraft universe and has written so many books for it already that honestly I couldn't see anybody else doing those interpretations. She handles it beautifully. You can download those, or you can download many of Blizzard's other titles, as well as many, many, many others at blizzardwatch.com/audible. Just sign up for the trial. You can get your free book, and there you go. That pretty much wraps us up for this episode of Lore Watch. So I guess, yeah, final thoughts, Joe?
I want to thank everybody for all the questions, which led to a lot of great discussions. Thank you very much. I'm also going to say thank you for continuing to be patrons, not only if you donate money, but listening and offering us any sort of page views, anything else, just coming to our site and keeping us going, because that means a lot to us.
And giving us stuff to talk about.
Giving us stuff to talk about. I love it. And you got a whole lot more of me this episode, so I hope you enjoyed that as well.
Rossi, final thoughts.
Apparently all we have to do to give Joe more time is for me to get real tired. Before every episode of Lore Watch from now on, Joe will be coming by my house with a loud horn and some squirty water. No, wake up. Oh, God, please let me sleep. Nope, you have a podcast. I want to get a word in edgewise.
Thank you again, guys, for all of your questions. You've been listening to Lore Watch, and we will see you in 2 weeks.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.